Welcome to the TechNori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on today's show, Disruption Joe. Let me get this out of the way first because it is important for you. Voice of Blockchain Conference is this September 30th and October 1st, two-day event, 200 speakers, 90 talks, 2 days. You can get your tickets right now at voiceofblockchain.com and use TechNori code TechNori200 and save half off on your tickets. I'm going to be speaking at this event, I believe, on October 1st with my good buddy Ken Wynn from Republic. For those of you who listen to the Startup Showcase on Saturdays, where we are partnered with Republic and you all can invest in the startups that pitch on the show, that Ken Wynn, that is my good pal, and he is going to be on the panel with me. And I think we didn't talk about it in this episode, but it's worth listening to the rest of it just for the purposes of blockchain is just like this crazy thing that just is growing and growing and growing, and yet nobody really knows what it is. Joe seems to know. That's a good start. But what I actually talk about on the blockchain side of this that I particularly like is crypto. And I talk about it because the impact of the big $19,000 value per Bitcoin from 2017 and 18 explosion, what it did for bringing the retail investor into the world of startups and investing in general, if everything flames out, that one thing will be the most valuable thing that could have ever happened because it enables everybody, you all listening, to invest in real startups. It makes it easier for all of us to get involved, to participate, because cryptocurrency made it okay for you to put your money in a digital format, which was previously the barrier, I think, to any sort of democratization of the investing world, which has always been for the richest 1%, and now that's coming down. Whether it's Bitcoin or it's Ethereum or whatever is the digital coin of the future, I have no idea. Joe, I think, has a better idea than I do, but neither one of us have any idea. You're going to listen to this podcast, and you're going to understand, obviously, the voice of blockchain and what that's about, but more importantly, you're going to learn a hell of a lot about the way you should be thinking about blockchain, about crypto, about privacy, about automation, about why all of these things sync up, and then ultimately why a conversation around the term incentive engineering is a very key part of the future of how the gig economy grows and exists. This episode is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. See why 65,000 businesses use ActiveCampaign for their marketing by signing up at activecampaign.com/TechNori. Get your first 2 months for free. This is my conversation with Disruption Joe Hernandez, the organizer of the Voice of Blockchain. So, I mean, the obvious reason that we're here talking to you, Joe, is the fact that you are the organizer of Voice of Blockchain and that you have been so gracious to invite me to speak at the Voice of Blockchain. And I recently found out that I'll be on the panel with my good friend Ken Wynn from Republic, who we've been partnered with now for, I don't even know where we're at here, 4 years or something like that. So it's really cool to sort of see these communities coming together. They're based in New York and they were spun off of AngelList in San Francisco and it's in Chicago. So The whole thing is awesome and I'm appreciative to be there. But I couldn't explain Voice of Blockchain and what it's going to be nearly as well as you. So I have you here to tell us all what is the Voice of Blockchain.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Thank you for participating in the show.
Of course.
And I think you guys are really connected to this, what the Jobs Act did with crowdfunding.
Yes.
And in 2017, there was a little bit of a hype bubble that came to blockchain around not just the cryptocurrency, but also blockchain, the technology that corporations and startups are building on. And I created Voice of Blockchain because I spent my hard-earned money going to some blockchain events, and we got a bunch of pitches that were
you can
low
call
quality.
Bullshit. It's okay.
Bullshit. Straight bullshit. And I'm excited about the technology. I think it's a world-changing thing.
I would say that is an understatement. Your handle is Disruption Joe. To say you're excited about technology is like me saying that I am excited about, you know, media.
Well, I went with Disruption Joe, not Blockchain Joe, so I wouldn't get pigeonholed.
Well, you don't want to get pigeonholed because blockchain is just like 2.0. There's going to be more.
Yeah, for me, it was Bitcoin first got me into it. And, of course, a degenerate gambler friend told me buy some, and I held on
asking
to it
for
half a year.
Asking for a friend.
Yep.
My degenerate gambling friend whose name is Joe. No, I'm just kidding.
You know, and I didn't look at it for about a year. And then I was introduced to Ethereum and saw this potential for a different social organization, incentive engineering that will allow us different outcomes. Yep. And I think there's a lot that can be done with it. It's earlier than most people think in the space, but this event, we decided there's three main ways people are looking at it. And I always hear blockchain or crypto. Do you ever hear people say that when they bring it up to you, like, are you into blockchain or are you into cryptocurrency, or do you like Bitcoin or blockchain?
Nobody says to me crypto and blockchain simultaneously.
Yeah.
They usually are just like, you're a crypto guy or whatever. And it's like, and normally the people who say that are not. They're just like, they're sort of right. Making fun of people. But
yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting to me that the systems inherently need each other.
Yeah.
There actually has to be an incentive to make it so that the control of this database, the governance of the database, can decentralize itself so that there's not a single point of failure. Like whether it's an example like the government turning off people's money who played poker in 2010. And there's also ideas of like, well, what about like Newman from Jurassic Park? What if he worked at JP Morgan? Like, who has the off switch to your money right now?
Who hasn't worked at JP Morgan at some point? That's
another, I'm sure that's Newman
a better
did.
Question. I'm sure he did.
But who does have the off switch? Everybody's money is going digital.
Yeah.
And nobody can answer that question. And then you go beyond that. You say, well, who should have the off switch?
Yeah, that's it. So like, and that's where like we get into this kind of dialogue. And I go back and forth in this. I do invest in crypto. I do invest in, you know, in Bitcoin and Ethereum. And I've fucked around with Ripple a little bit. And a handful of others, Litecoin, whatever. But I'm sort of stuck on this. Like, the world works in a certain way. And while I love... Listen, I think everyone should push the needle and try to like push the man, so to speak. Where I get caught up is like money talks and bullshit walks. And mm-hmm. everything in this world is for sale. And if you don't like that, I'm sorry to be the person to tell you that. Even in socialist societies, it's the same. The powers, the Kremlin has the money. Everybody's got the money. And the thing about blockchain and with crypto in particular and money and finances is that people, I think, dream, and maybe this is the people on the lower end of this that are dreaming that the decentralization, while it does of course have magnificent implications across, you know, Africa and things that where people do not have access to things,
right, where there is a trust problem,
there's a serious trust problem. But in the end, for it to actually take the shape that it needs to take, my mind tells me that the Jamie Dimon, speaking of Chase of the world, will have to have a seat at the table and will control it. And then, in which case, how decentralized is it? And then the part that sort of keeps me going back and forth and back and forth is that I look at how much money, you know, the Winklevi and others have and how they can quickly tank Bitcoin and Ethereum by simply unloading a bunch of coins or buying a bunch, you know, and the manipulations in the market are very similar to the very early stages of the gold standard.
Yes.
And that is inherently good. And inherently just the same bullshit as before. And that's where I get caught.
Time.
It could take a long time. And like my big thing here is like, I'm not saying don't pursue it. I think we should, and we should learn and try it. My just big question is like, will it ever be able to, like, this is where a world where the people, I know we say this on the dollar, but that's not true, where the people actually run the government and the country that they live in. That has to be the world we live in order for that to work. Because until that is the case, I still think that in order for this to really take off, the powers that be are still going to own a lot of control on it.
It is. It's a nonviolent protest.
In a way, yeah.
In a way, it is. And there's plenty of millennials who are looking at the banks saying, I do not trust that. I exit your system.
Yeah.
And when most people like us think about it.
But they don't at some point because they need to put the money back to give it to somebody else and pay taxes on it. The minute it becomes taxable, it's back in the system. And well, that's like, that's the...
So far, that's what's happening yeah. with it. And one of the guests that we're going to have at the conference, he actually created a cryptocurrency in a socialist country, trying to bring a free market yeah, there right. called the Petro. And his story is incredible. He had to escape while the electricity was off in the entire country. And now he's guilty of treason in Venezuela. So he's going to instead talk...
He's here for a while.
talk with a couple of reporters and so forth while he's at the conference. But the idea that we don't have the trust problem doesn't mean that other places do. And this is analogous to the internet. At the beginning, why did everybody stop using AOL?
Yeah, well, it sucked.
It sucked. And it really sucked for businesses because they were stealing their business models and kicking them off the platform. And eventually, there was a non-controlled version of this internet that sent information from one person to another that you could build your business on and not have to worry what AOL was going to do to you. Yep. Now you have this infrastructure that can send payments or ownership of something digitally. I'm not sending you a copy of the file. I'm sending you the actual digital asset itself. Yeah. And that's going to change just like publishers were. Their business model was changed. So the post office.
I think this is a conversation that's important because, and this will be, this is an example of the kind of stuff you're going to get at Voice of Blockchain. The conversation piece that I think, you know, this is with anything new. Lack of knowledge, ignorance in the implication is what makes people struggle to ask the right questions. So when we look at this, you know, we're talking about this almost having two conversations simultaneously. One is I'm looking at the extreme of, we'll call it the liberalist left, who's like, I want total decentralization.
Right.
I don't know that we'll ever get there, and I don't know that we need to get there. I think we can have powers involved in it, because even if we still, let's say that Libra from Facebook goes through and it's connected to Goldman Sachs and it's connected to Chase and it's actually like a regulated thing. And that's okay, because it still enables the conversation that you're talking about, which is the people who live in these different communities like Venezuela, who do not have a way to transact money without the Gestapo or somebody showing up at their door and knocking it in and taking their share.
Yeah.
This is a way to solve a just insanely unimaginable problem for millions, billions of people in India and Africa and Asia and just all these places that it's not in our view. We're not thinking of that. We're just thinking like, we just want decentralized.
I mean, that's one use case.
Yes, looking for sure. At it, and we're just talking about crypto. I wasn't talking about blockchain in general.
Right, that's talking just from the money side. I think there's not enough understanding. Like 99% of people can't tell you where the dollar comes from, how much is printed every year, and they can't tell you.
Nor could our president right now.
Yes, exactly. And he's rallying for a huge QE push, which means they're going to print a lot of money to keep up with other countries printing money. And where does that money go?
Did you see, by the way, just as an aside, the new bill that he's printing out?
I haven't.
Oh, it's called an IOU. That's my good joke.
That was a good
one. Ba-dum-bing-ch.
That was a good one. Anyway. Caught me. I look at it as Bitcoin in a way is kind of a hedge for irresponsible monetary policy, just like holdings in gold are. But it's the fastest appreciating asset of the last 10 years. So whether it is speculative or not, you know, it's almost irresponsible to not have a portion of your portfolio in a non-correlated highest returning asset of the last 10 years.
If for no other reason, like I originally invested in Bitcoin and then some Ethereum. Just to know, to learn. Like, I just wanted to, like, feel, like, what does the ride feel like? And so far, it's been pretty good for me because I got in early enough to do that. But, like, I think you're kind of nuts to not pay attention, at least, even if you don't put your real money in, like, to just be, like, watching it. I think it's
stupid. One of the most interesting numbers to me was that if you had 1% of your portfolio over the last 3 years in Bitcoin and the rest in cash, you would have outperformed the S&P.
Yeah. That's insane.
So it's interesting now at this conference.
Granted, it did go from like $600 a coin to like $19,000 a coin. So
right.
It's like,
and then like, back to $3,000 and now at $10,000.
Like that's like having like Apple stock grow from Steve Jobs' garage to today in about a year and a half.
Right, right.
Which is insane.
And Amazon's had 95% drawbacks as well. So it handles like an equity. I think that the Bitcoin side of it is important for people to understand that there isn't a company behind it at all. And when we look at companies like TD Ameritrade or Fidelity sponsoring, because they're investing heavily to get in the space, because they look at that information and they say, oh, 1% and cash would have beat the S&P. Like, we need this for our clients.
Yeah.
But on the other side, now you have startups that are out there building interesting things. And how do you coach a startup on how to run the company that nobody has any power in, that you just participate? You know, in Bitcoin, it's an organization of 100,000 miners that does not have a boss or a CEO. Nobody applies for the job. You just run the code or you don't. And it's continually worked and organized that many people over 10 years to continually grow the value of an asset. That's amazing to me. And it's both free market and kind of socialist in its own way. It's like incentivized communism or like compassionate capitalism in one.
I like how you said incentivized engineering. I mean, so I want to harp on that for a second because I think it's, so I'm not a huge faith guy, but I am a person who does not ignore trends. And I look at where I think it's not, again, like I'm not, everything happens for a reason. That's not what I'm trying to get at, but it's, there are certain things that you start to see and you notate and you're like, okay, this is going to go somewhere. And I'm going to reference back to an interview I did just before this with the CEO of Catalytic. We talked about automation. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to reference back before that a podcast that will come out before that, which is with Humatics. And that is talking about the measurement of space in front of us. And you would wonder, like, where the fuck are you going? Here's where I'm going. All of these things are, in their own individual way, revolutionary and important. But on their own, they die on the vine. Mm. As an integrated compartment and component of life, they are monumentally transformational in a way we cannot even believe right now. And I say that in that transportation, because there's a digital number affixed to every single molecule of air or whatever, I don't even know if that's a thing, in front of us, is then affixed to a data point, which is then affixed to a numerical valuation of some sort. We are basically training ourselves to believe in a process that human beings institute. And that is an organization that's not owned by anyone. It's a process that we follow, which leads to an automated outcome that we hopefully get right and it kind of learns to correct itself. And this starts to lean us 25, 50 years from now into a Minority Report-ish world, which if we don't do each one of the three things I just said, we can't get there.
Yeah.
And that's the part of this that is mind expanding.
And privacy is a huge part of this conversation as well. And there's some new things that are going to be enabled with this technology. For example, there's one of the companies called Enigma, and they're working on multi-party computation, which is a really deep, nerdy way of saying privacy where nobody is running the company, kind of the way Bitcoin runs currency with nobody running the company. But you think of use cases for this, like could we analyze big data on sensitive records like HIPAA records in healthcare?
Wouldn't that be an amazing world where you knew that you could actually give up your proper information and know that it wasn't going to come back and get you?
Right. If you go to the bar, why do they need to know your address, your full name, your height, your eye color, and all that? What are the pieces of your identity that they need to know? Well, to me, the answer is that you're 21.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
So why should they know the rest of that?
No, I totally agree. And then the second evolution of that, we talked to these folks, and I'm blanking on the name of the company, but the gist of it was that they were taking this information and they were essentially building technology around it so that I could essentially share with you only what of my information I was permitting you to take. And then the other, I controlled it essentially.
I really like where you're going with that because ethics is a huge part of what I'm trying to instill in this because it's so formative. So we have Congressman Foster, who's head of the AI committee and co-chair of the Blockchain Caucus, likes to say he's the only physicist in Congress. We should probably have more.
It would be a good thing.
I think so.
Social media personalities aren't really panning out.
Yeah. Nadine Strossen, who was 20-year president of ACLU when she retired from there, that she actually had Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Antonin Scalia both there to celebrate her. You know, she wrote a book called Hate, Why We Must Fight It with Free Speech and Not Censorship.
Yeah.
And these are the ideas that are going to build whatever this technology becomes, and if Jamie Dimon or somebody, like you say, tries to leverage into it, well, are we building the systems in the proper way? Are we building the right thing? So I want the startups to see that. I want people to understand what that is. And the automation of things, you know, the machines don't want your dirty paper money. You trust the machines for everything. Music recommendations. Yeah. You know, do you call a friend for directions when you're lost on the street?
No.
Never. Never. Absolutely not. And now if you're going to talk about automating every stock, bond, currency, commodity that exists, are you going to do it with a paper document somewhere and a digital twin? Or are you going to have a natively digital bearer instrument?
So I want to ask you, what gets Joe into Disruption Joe world? How did you find your way and be like, all right, I'm Disruption Joe, and then this is your world now?
I love technology, obviously, as we stated. Whether it's blockchain, nanotech, artificial intelligence, just always sitting there watching podcasts or listening to podcasts, watching YouTube videos. And I decided I need a change from my previous career. I had taken a chance in trying to own businesses, and I went towards the route of bars and restaurants after having done some more relevant data work before that. And I didn't have a passion for it. And if I sit there during my free time watching these videos rather than TV, yeah, this is what I should be in. So I just made the name. If you want to talk about a vulnerable moment, when you hand your mom a card that says, I'm Disruption Joe, that's it. That's the one.
I what did she say?
She said she loves me.
I've had this same moment. I mean, we're not dissimilar in this. Like, I had this vision of like using media for a different way. Like, everyone I talked to when I was going to graduate school at Northwestern, we're in Medill, it's the capital of media, whatever. And I'm here at WGN, and I worked with, you know, Sun Times and Tribune and Hearst and whatever. And none of them saw what I was seeing. It was like, there's a media world where the business and the finances of it are on the back end of it. It's the media is pure, and that I say what I want to say.
Absolutely. And you would probably really like the incentive engineering side of blockchain, because a lot of these things that are public goods or common resource pool problems, like those are the economic terms, yeah, you know, they can't be solved in this advertising pay-to-play model. But you need a better system. So the idea would be something along the lines of, in Dave Chappelle's, one of his specials, he said, you know, I'm going to start a GoFundMe for Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
And regardless of how you feel about that whole situation, the point that he was getting behind was, when people do good things, it needs to pay. And yeah, we need media that actually takes some of that economy as a scale. You know, me posting on Facebook, you posting on Facebook, nobody gives a shit.
Yeah.
But once you get 5 million people, 1.2 billion people posting, there's a lot of emergent value that comes out of that. And if we can actually put a unit of account to that and trap that specific value and then pay it back to people doing the right behaviors and allow them to hold stake in social systems that actually benefit humanity, we can accomplish much bigger goals, more agilely coordinated global goals, and the opportunity is here now. The tool's here. We just need to teach people how to use it.
And that, your point there goes back to my sort of the three laws reference I was making, the Minority Report reference. Is like the financial incentive needs to be built into this. And
three laws, not the three seashells.
Well, that's Demolition Man.
Yeah, different.
That's how you wipe your ass after you go potty. That's Demolition Man.
Still never figured out how to use the
That's the joke in the movies, and nobody knows how to use the three seashells. That's the whole. Speaking of which, quick plug, Rambo Last Blood comes out Friday, September 20th, to a theater near you, and I will sure as shit be there. That's a side challenge. The three laws is essentially like needing to have the process and sort of a guidance and an automation and the whole nine yards. The only way that, if this is the fourth law or the third, depends on how you count, in order for this whole thing to work, there has to be a way for people to financially, whether it's money or something in return for their value, there has to be an inherent way for people to extract their value in some sort of payable way. And that's where this comes in, is that like the engineers who are actually solving the problems are being incentivized engineering. They're being paid to do this, much in the same way that you're going to start to see the networks for 5G. People are going to start actually owning the data, you know, platform, and then sharing it with people locally in rural areas, and you pay them.
Yes.
To actually use it, and then they pay, you know, whoever.
User-owned companies.
Yes.
Bitcoin is...
That's the real gig economy,
in
by the way.
A user-owned company.
People don't know that. The gig economy, they immediately think of like Care.com and Uber. That's bullshit. That's side hustle. Yep. Gig economy is... This is gig economy.
The shareholders in Uber, once we get past the investment phase, are basically entropy.
Yes. Totally.
That's an issue. So it is inevitable that they'll be out compete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally agree. This is incredibly fascinating. There's obviously going to be a lot more, and this is just two dudes yucking it up about really like 1 or 2% of what the total is. The blockchain event is going to be September 30th and October 1st. Where's it at? And give people some more information.
Yeah, the event is at Venue 610, overlooking Grant Park on Michigan Avenue here. September 30th and October 1st, we have code TechNori200 for half off tickets for the first time people to use that after this gets out there in the world. It's 200 speakers. There's 90 talks on three stages over the 2 days, and we're going to have a great after party as well. So whether you're in on the corporate side looking at healthcare, we have companies like Humana and Optum. We have people from McDonald's, Walgreens, showing what's really happening, Samsung, SAP. And then we have the digital assets and markets, which all of the biggest traders and family office groups, Fidelity and TD Ameritrade, are sponsors. And then on the startup side, well, we use the corporate sponsorship money of flying people doing really cool things like Nadine Strausser or Todd Weaver from Purism, who's building open source end-to-end private laptops and devices. People from all kinds of blockchain startups that most of your listeners probably haven't heard of, but are gonna in the next few years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, hey, congratulations on getting this off the ground. I know better than anyone how much of a pain in the ass and how hard it is to get a real event off the ground. So congrats to you to continue to grow this. And I'm excited to speak at it. And I hope everyone out there listening right now checks it out and goes. It's certainly worth your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And of course, you have to follow you at Disruption Joe.
Yeah, Disruption Joe. And look up Voice of Blockchain.
Simple enough.
Voiceofblockchain.com.
Can't beat it. Great.
All the info's there.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Excellent.
To invest in startups, download past episodes, or apply to pitch on the Startup Showcase, check out TechNori.com. Stay connected by following us on social at TechNori, or you can follow me at Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.